We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
It's OMF on EEI.
Ottavino ready, delivers. Swinging a fly ball, center field, sinking fast. It drops for a hit, and it's going to win the ball game. Minnesota beats the Red Sox 4-3. Minnesota ends the Red Sox win streak, the final Twins 4, and
all right,
Boston
3. If you had them
3.
Finishing out the rest of the season and never losing a game, you were wrong. Okay, yeah. You were wrong. Admit it. You were wrong. Right? You didn't get it right.
I think
you're
going to win 9 out of 10 the rest of the way.
Exactly.
9 out of every 10.
Right.
No?
I think you'll take it. But I will say this, Lou. What a bizarre, bizarre game. I mean, from the emergency siren that sounded off for like 5 minutes to the zillion reviews we had in this game. And I didn't realize that you can't review a foul ball like that because that was the most egregious call of the day.
Yeah.
And it ended up getting Cora tossed out of the game. I mean, bizarre stuff in this one.
Yeah, Cora getting tossed, the ump getting hit in the ding-ding with the baseball. That, to me, the slow-motion version on Nesson seriously had me cackling like an 8-year-old boy. Like, that was priceless. They showed that in slow motion. I was like, it never happened.
No, I'm still laughing about it. The game was a weird game, and that guy probably deserved it because he screwed up that one call. You know, they replayed 3 calls, and to me, I don't even know how you overturn that one with Devers, and it was very, very costly.
Yeah.
End up getting 2 runs on that thing. That's not an obvious call. The only obvious one was the one they screwed up on.
But they got to rewrite this replay rule.
It's awful.
It is awful. It's terrible. And they do. Joe's right. They have to redo it. Now, I believe that in video replay, because I think you want to get it right. But aren't we noticing more and more? They're getting it wrong. Or when they get it right, it takes them 4 or 5 minutes to get it right. What does that do to a game already that is being challenged by pace?
Yeah, that was just, that was a strange game. But you sort of felt like the team was like, took 3 straight and Pineda was good and they were just sleepwalking. And you're like, you know, the Twins really should be up more than this. And the next thing you know, you have 1 good inning, you hit a reliever, it doesn't throw the ball well, and you're back in it. So you drop a game, but if you're going to do it, it's nice to see the kind of fight back the way they did.
I would say Richards, like, you know, as far as there was, like, you know, the fact that he only gave up 2 runs and they kept him in the game and the fact that, like, it could have been worse. Because, again, I was like, holy cow, this poor guy, take him out of there. But no, you know, so the damage isn't, you know, as bad as it should have been. So you're still in the game. And the whole time you're sitting there going, okay, eventually when Pineda gets out of there, they're going to end up getting some runs. They're going to end up getting some runs. And that's what happened.
Yeah, Pineda was unbelievable. He was unhittable. And apparently he's given up the pine tar and all that other stuff. And he's taken on food.
Yeah.
Food is the thing that he's into right now.
I was going to say, what's his vice? So his vice is not a pine tar anymore. It's food. It's a pumpkin pie, a hoagies.
God,
it's
he's gotten big.
What is Minnesota known for? What type of food? Whatever they're known for, whatever their local dish is.
Come on, for you think it matters to him?
A lot of Scandinavian food up there.
Yeah, is that what it is? A cannoli? Man, that guy is a large human being.
Throwing well, but he's a big boy. Richards, like, I don't know. I don't see the same guy I saw years ago. You know, I don't know what happened to a two-seamer. Like, used to have a ball that used to ride really in hard on righties to go with that slider that went down and away. Now it's just four-seam fastball, and to me, it's got a little cut to it as well. He hung in there. He did what he did in Baltimore. You know, he ended up going 5, and actually it was 0 earned runs. He had that Dahlback error, but he's just sort of flirting with it. The stuff isn't impressive, but that's 2 games in a row, 5 innings, 2 runs, 5 innings, no runs. So, I mean, you'll take it, and that's what kind of the staff is doing. It's a bunch of 5-and-dive Johnsons. 5 innings, 1 run, no runs, 2 runs, and get the hell out of the game.
Yeah.
And let me bring this up, and it probably will be misunderstood when we start talking about it. Another big, huge hit by Alex Verdugo today. Yeah. By the way, he's one of those guys. We talk about baseball, and sometimes it becomes boring, and the guys don't have much personality. This is a guy that gives you personality on virtually every single pitch, okay? Every single pitch. And that at-bat was absolutely phenomenal.
Yep.
Got him back in the game with a 3-3 tie. And I'm not saying here, and listen to me carefully, I'm not saying he makes you forget Mookie, okay? But he certainly makes all of that and what happened, less palatable. I mean, it really looks at it, and you say to yourself, he's pretty good. He's not Mookie, but he's pretty damn good.
I mean, there's a couple things that I'm
pretty good.
Just, recently, certain things have started to really irritate me. Like, anybody who compares anyone, old, young, coming in college, coming out of the draft, currently playing in the NFL, when they compare them to Tom Brady. And the other one that is starting to irritate me more is, like, Mookie Betts. Like, let's not compare them to one of the best to play the game right now. Verdugo, I agree with you. I like him. And that bat at bat was outstanding. I mean, just flat out bring it. You can just tell that he was just – wasn't he behind? He was down 0-2.
Yeah.
He fought his way back, fouled off a bunch of pitches, and then he just drills that – into left field, and they get three runs out of it, and they're tied. It was unbelievable.
I
went back to sleep.
Yeah, I know. He's not Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts is one of the better players in the game. And I still think that trade, I mean, you're happy to get Verdugo back. He's a good baseball player, right? Good. He gets out there, he grinds. He's basically, he's a dirt dog. That's basically what he is, right? He just goes, he's a good player. That trade still is going to be judged on the other two pieces, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Like Jeter Downs, Connor Wong. Is Jeter Downs your second baseman of the future? Is Connor Wong your catcher? Then you'll sit there and say, listen, we got an everyday outfielder, second baseman, catcher in that deal. But still, it's nice to know at least you got a very good player who plays the game the right way, the way you appreciate it, and he's fun to watch.
Yeah, I know people get sensitive about that one, but I think when you look at Verdugo right now, and I agree with you, the other two guys are really going to tell the true tale of that trade. But you could have got totally burned on this one. And right now you got a pretty good player, and he's still relatively young. This was, when you have to give up a player of that stature, and he's probably top three player in the league, you got something back in return, and obviously he's being productive.
Well, the other thing that kind of stood out to me, Lou, and I want to get your opinion on this first, because in this game, especially in important moments, you can tell, this Twins team, they're good. They're going to be good. They have good defensive players. They got good pitching. The two guys that you saw before Pineda, they just didn't have great days. But you can understand how, they can be a really good team.
Yeah.
And so you should – I don't know if they just caught them on a bad day and, were overstating what they accomplished. Or is now they go into the weekend playing the White Sox, is the honeymoon gonna be over? Are we done now? Have we seen the best that they have to offer?
Playing 162, so I
But listen, we're reacting to it in real time, so we're not gonna sit here and forecast 60 games, but we're reacting to it in real time, so it is interesting to see how their emotions go.
White Sox are a good team. I think they're a better team. I think they have better pitching, starting pitching. Even though Maeda and Berrios are very, very good. Pineda's throwing his ass off, so. That's a good team. Now, you kind of caught them in a four-game set where their lineup was a little bit messed up, right? Simmons ends up getting COVID. He was swinging the bat real well, and Buxton ends up tweaking his hammy, and Donaldson's just coming back, and Nelly's sick in game one.
Cruz
so
didn't play one. Yeah,
you did get a little bit of a break, but even with all those guys in there, they got a good lineup. And, you start getting to the point of, the Red Sox here now 9-4, and you look at them and say, well, that's a favorite to win the Central. What's the difference between them and the Red Sox? Why aren't you kind of buying in right now on this team? I had them at 87 wins. I think they're a good team. I think they can win a few more than that just by the way they've played, the way they look. I mean, I think this team right now is going to be competing for a playoff spot, because I look at some of the supposedly good teams around here in this league, in the American League, and say, well, what's the difference? There's really not much difference.
Well, right now the way they're playing, and again, it's a streaky game. But the way they're playing right now, they're good. You keep on tweeting it out after every game just to piss people off. You're right. Right now, they're good. I hate to look at it because it's only April, and we've seen teams do this before. They get out to these jackrabbit starts, and then something happens down the road. They don't have the depth, or the pitching goes awry, whatever. I would say this is fun right now. And they're not only good, They're fun to watch. These come from behind games. They came from behind today. Now, they ended up losing in the bottom of the ninth, but this was another game they got back into. So this is fun. And you look forward to four over the weekend, even with the bad weather. We may end up playing four games in 2 days. Who the hell knows?
Cart rides in the dugout, waving to people. If you get on second, you hit a double. Like, oh, there's so many cool things to talk about.
Better than the alternative.
The thing is, you talk about, I think they do have some of that depth. The people like, you know, talk to me in July and injuries happen. It's like, okay, you know, I mean, they might need a starter this weekend. So you call up Tanner Houck, a guy that absolutely dominated that people want in this rotation anyways, you know. And then there's another kid, Seabold. You saw the kid, Bisardo, the other day. That's a bullpen arm that's going to come up at some point. You know, by the way, you got Chris Sale coming up in July at some point. You know, you still got, like, everyday lineup. If somebody goes down, these utility players who are moving around a lot all of a sudden become the everyday left fielder, the everyday second baseman. So because you only got three guys on the bench, but all of them can start for you for a month period of time, and you still got a kid in Jaron Duran that can kind of solidify an outfield. So there's a lot more depth that even if injuries do happen, you know, you still have a lot of guys to come up here. I think all the questions this team has, like team like the Yankees, man, I tried to tell you guys that rotation is a mess, and it has been. It's just telling you, this team right now, this isn't just a hot start. This team is going to be there for the whole summer.
All right, we shall see. But what a bizarre game. I must tell you this, Lou, watching the doubleheader yesterday in the seven-inning games, I love the seven-inning games.
Yeah.
And I'll go one step beyond that. If you're a sport, and I know the traditionalists are going to hate this, if you're a sport that is concerned with not just the pace but the length of games and then how long can people stay with you, a seven-inning game pretty much guarantees you that you're going to be playing in 2.5 hours. You're going to be playing an NBA or NHL time frame for their game. It might be something Major League Baseball has to think about down the line.
Never. You mean 7 innings on a regular basis? What they need to do for me is to schedule more of them. Schedule them.
Schedule more doubleheaders.
Yeah, schedule them. Like when the schedule comes out, you know, whatever. Find a day. I don't know. Rather than a four-game set where you might have like a Monday through Thursday or something like that, make it Tuesday through Thursday, Wednesdays, 2 sevens. Like, schedule a couple of these things. Maybe
you
do a
day night? You do a day night? Is that how you do it?
Well, no, just do it the way you're doing it. Like, yesterday was beautiful.
They're not going to do that when you have full crowds because you're going to have to give up 37,000 people at the ballpark times what's the average ticket price.
Fine, go day night. They're not going to do that. Go day night, whatever it takes. But schedule them. Schedule a couple here and there. I think the players would dig it.
Yeah, you're being too rational. Like you're just...
They're never going to 7-inning games.
No, I agree with you. What you're doing is you're catering to the fans and the players. That is what you're doing. That's not the way professional sports work. It is the almighty dollar. It is how much money can we squeeze out of this? How can we maximize our dollar? So, no, it ain't going to happen. You want a doubleheader? You better have a rain out.
And you got to make it fun, Lou. Come on.
Yeah, you're not making it fun, Lou.
Yeah, they're never going to do it.
There's other things. I mean, first you got to start with a pitch clock, and you got to start doing some of the things that can improve the pace of play. Because I don't think you can just go to 7-inning games. You know what I mean? You got to start doing a pitch clock and seeing what the thing looks like. Figure out this damn instant replay. This is a joke, and start moving the game along a little bit.
Computer enough for baseball.
The game is getting longer and longer. That's their biggest problem.
We actually had a horn delay today. I've never seen that before.
Only 5 minutes. It wasn't a big deal, and it wasn't too irritating, was it? Oh, my God.
These guys act like they haven't played in front of 40,000 people before screaming and yelling. Like, so a siren's going off. Okay, it rattled you a little bit. Oh, after
you
were about 30 seconds, it's like, are we good?
You didn't have to deal with it. You could lower down your headphones. The poor players out there. How about if this...
Joe?
Listen to
Mama.
Let's go.
That might be the end of it.
Are they going to double back with the horn?
They came back.
Fans say, let's play.
How'd it go?
It doubled up.
A little eerie, though.
All right, let's go. They knew it was nothing. I mean, it's just a loud noise.
What is the purpose of doing that for weather? What weather do you have in Minnesota?
It's a test.
Tornadoes.
Well, I think they have like tornadoes coming in the summertime, and they need to kind of make sure the horn works. And people realize
it
that
works.
When it goes off. Yeah.
It works.
With everything going on in that city, that's the last thing I would be doing right now is, you know, letting that horn sound, freaking everybody out that's already kind of on edge.
The theater of the absurd in Minneapolis this week.
I mean, you can't play, what is this, golf? I mean, you can't play with a little siren going on in the background?
It's
Am I wrong?
Like, quiet, please.
Since when is it quiet, please? Usually you have 40,000 people screaming at the top of their lungs, right? Yelling and screaming. Now we got a horn. That's loud. Okay. Throw the pitch.
Mr. Tough Guy, you know? Put some earplugs in your ears and shut up.
Oh, my
play.
God. Yeah, so funny. And I think Pineda actually ended up, either he walked the batter that
he was
pitching or something happened. It rattled
him. His first
two
pitches went in the dirt right after that.
Jeez, brutal.
That's the Bradfo horn, isn't it?
That's another one.
Bradfo's coming to the curtain. Right. Watch out.
Long week of baseball right there. Yeah, a lot of day games.
It was bizarre. Bill Belichick spoke today. Or did he?
He did.
He did speak today. Yeah.
You know, I was doing the game. I missed it. I heard he just opened up and told everybody about, you know, what the draft plans are, why they spent so much money, his feelings on Brady. I heard he was just a different Bill.
So what did you think? He's moving up for Justin Fields. He told us all today. How do you feel? Yeah. You wanted that.
Yeah. I missed that. I missed that comment. But
he was in a great mood. He was in, you know, joking with Dan Roach and, you know, answering all the questions and being real polite and not saying a goddamn thing.
Dan Roach, the final question.
Hey, Bill. How you doing?
Good, Dan. How about you?
No complaints. No complaints.
That's good. We don't want to hear him anyway, so.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Must have been a Monday after beating the Jets.
So Bill told us today that you move up in the draft if a guy that you project that sixth or seventh on your board is dropping down and he's, let's say, 12 or 11 or something like that. That's when you move up. On the other hand, if you get to 15 and the player you want is still available and you project he's still going to be available at 20, you drop down on the board. So
he basically
gave us both ways in which you could go in the thing. And I loved him with the quarterback because wasn't it clear that a couple of the guys were trying to get him to isolate? Did he want a quarterback with more running ability?
That was the opening question.
He basically said either one, we just play to whatever his skill is, right?
Okay, unless you're, you know, the first or the second pick, I mean, we could give him a hard time for not answering any questions, but of course it is organic. It is free-flowing. It changes pending on what happens and what you think your opportunities are. And, like, you may sit there and go, we got nothing going on. Next thing you know, a trade happens and somebody that you want is there. Like, I'll reference this story that Scott Pioli was talking about. That's been, you know, going around the Twitter sphere and on TV about how we ended up with Matt Light.
Oh, it's a great story.
It's a great story how, like, the Jets wanted to get Matt Light, and sure enough, Pioli called up Matt and said, hey, and Matt tells Scott Pioli, say, hey, listen, the Jets are two ahead of you guys, and they said they're taking me.
He's on hold with the Jets at the time.
He's on hold, yeah. And sure enough, what does Pioli do? He trades up and then takes Matt Light because he got a nugget of information. That's real time, like, you know, stuff that happens. You don't expect it to happen, so you're just adjusting as you go.
Well,
so
hopefully, with that said, hopefully there's enough communication with teams in front of them that if Justin Fields. And hopefully they have a grade on him high enough that they're ready to pull a trigger at 5 or 4 or 6 or 8 or 10 or whatever it might be, right? That's to me is the goal, and if he's still there, get it done. Get it done. I'm in.
Yeah, I don't know, he's not going for a quarterback. There's so much bull crap going on right now. I guess we're going to play some Bill stuff even though it's enlightening. Because I sit there and I go, because the word is that the San Francisco 49ers are 98% for sure taking Mac Jones. I don't believe it. I don't believe it at all. I just don't. I'm sitting there going, if we think that offense is tailor-made, like a quarterback can come in there, and really, first of all, they're going to sit behind Jimmy G, so it's not like they have to play right away. And if your offense is a lot of play action, run oriented, strong defense, that whole thing, then wouldn't you want a more athletic quarterback? Like if Mac Jones can do it, shouldn't Justin Fields be able to do it? Like so, if you have the option between the two and you feel like they're equals, why wouldn't you get the more athletic quarterback just because he has an added incentive and you like their personalities the same? It makes it just the misinformation that is being released is all bullcrap. Well, actually, no. The misinformation is legit. Like, they're doing it on purpose.
Yeah.
So I don't believe I am not sold, and I don't know about you guys, about this whole Mac Jones going second, or was it going third, to the San Francisco 49ers. I'm just not buying it.
Yeah, Lombardi, for some reason, is sold on that. He's again, was talking about it today.
He's a modern-day Charlie Castleman.
Yeah,
when has he ever
believes
been right?
That there's an absolute there that, 98% of the teams believe the 49ers are going to do it. So let's hear a little bit of Bill. I want to play the comment about Kraft because somebody brought up the question. It was a good one. Was it Volan? I can't even remember. Yeah, about Kraft making some comments about the draft. And it was interesting watching the eye movement of Bill Belichick as the question was being asked. Using a, now that they're suddenly using a different approach. So what is that different approach?
Yeah, well, we're always, you know, always looking to do, to get better. Always try to evaluate everything we do and try to find a better way to do it. So that's a, I would say an annual process with the draft, but it's something that we do on a regular basis throughout the course of the season, whether it's, you know, whatever period of time it is. So there were some things that last year that were unique to the draft process. As I mentioned, some of those are similar this year. Some of them are a little bit different. So we, you know, certainly use some of that experience to improve the process a little bit this year. At least we felt we improved it this year. But ultimately, we're still going to try to, you know, evaluate the players and make the decisions that we feel like are best for the football team. That's really what we've always tried to do. I don't think the mission's changed.
So in other words, Kraft is wrong. Nothing has changed. We're doing exactly what we always do.
Well, I would say last year was unique, like Bill was saying. I'm sure they kind of look back at their evaluations and how they went about it because it was just so limited, right? There was no way to really kind of see these guys, work with them, talk to them. And then just maybe not even with their draft talk, you know, the guys that they drafted, more like the overall draft board and see how guys sort of panned out, maybe where some of the things they missed because they weren't able to see a guy on a pro day or things like that and just sort of use it. They'll get a little bit more eyes on the players this year, but I think kind of learn from last year because it was such minimal information and see if you can build off it or try to gain an advantage this year.
See, I even thought that the way that the question was set up, like, I didn't feel like the question was asked correctly, because to me, when I remember Kraft saying is that, listen, we didn't do a good job.
He did.
And we're changing our philosophy. Like it wasn't, and to me the answer of it, of course everything is different, but to me when I heard Kraft say that, it made me seem that I read into it as Bill did a bad job evaluating. Like, the guys that he picked weren't very good. Not that there was a unique set of circumstances. Like, no, we didn't. You didn't pick good players. Like, over the last 2 years, like, you didn't get a tight end in the last 2 years. Like, what are you waiting for? You missed on this guy. You missed on that guy. I just read into it differently than I think actually, you know.
I think Volan did mention that, though. He did mention the comments by Kraft. I think he did it. So another question.
Next question, Ben Volan, followed by Mike Giardi.
Hey, Bill, hope you're having a good offseason.
Yeah.
a couple weeks ago, we talked to Robert Kraft, and he said he was asked about the draft, and he said, I don't feel we've done the greatest job the last few years. And he said he's seen a different approach this year. Would you agree?
Well,
with
that's it. Hold on. That's it, Ryan. See, I've seen a different approach. No, I think what he actually said is, and now you're going to have to correct me on this, Ryan, and double check maybe at some time, is that we're going to take a different approach. Like, not I've seen a different approach. It was like, no, I want them to do it differently. I want them to do it better.
I thought Robert did say something like that he had seen it. That,
yeah,
you know,
I
something
think he
that
did
they
too.
Were. Something
so
I'm
remembering
doing.
It wrong then, right?
Yeah, something that they were doing that he's seen a different approach.
Really, the teams who draft well are the ones who will be consistently good. I don't feel we've done the greatest job the last few years, and I really hope and I believe I've seen a different approach this year. And
all right, that was it. Well, then that was right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that's so differently. So what does that mean then? I've seen a different approach.
Well, he's seen something different, and it might be that he sat down with Belichick and he probably asked him, "What are we doing?" And Bill probably gave him an answer, or "We're doing this a little different," or that.
It was horrible.
And what Bill is telling you is, no, 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 no. He's not going to admit it, especially that Kraft said it. He's not going to get out there and say, oh, yeah, Robert was right. We're changing everything. Exactly what he said. No, he's basically saying we're doing business the way we always do it. We always make some changes. We always, you know, tweak certain things. I don't think the mission has changed. The other one I thought was interesting was a question asked about spending this year an awful lot of money on offense. Is that an indication that you didn't give Cam enough weapons this past year?
The process this off season was to, as it always is, to try and improve the team and to try to do everything we can to make ourselves as competitive as we can this year, which is what we try to do every year. You know, we had several years in free agency where we were, you know, one of the least cash spending teams in the league. And then this year, that changed and balanced it off. And so that's really what you have in the NFL, teams that don't spend and spend, teams that spend and their years and they don't spend. It averages out over a period of time, and that's part of the averaging process came this year. But ultimately, we're trying to, again, do what we can to improve the team like we always do every year. And
yeah, you could have said that. You could have ran that tape every year for the last 20 years.
Yeah, he's not. Right? He's not. Nothing's really changed. That's what he's
basically doing. We do what's best for the team. We're going to, you know. Was the question actually like getting Cam weapons? Is that what the question was?
It was asking whether there was an indication, and we can find the question, Ryan, whether this is an indication of all of this spending that you didn't give Cam the weapons this past year, I believe.
Good afternoon, Bill. I just wanted to ask, based on what you guys did this offseason, unprecedented spending spree for this organization, the way you spent on offense, is that an indication that you feel like what you surrounded Cam with last year wasn't enough to highlight what Cam brought to the table?
Well, that was a good non-answer, huh? He didn't even mention it.
No.
He just went right to, we just try to build the team and do what's best for the team and put some talent in the field. We spent a lot of money. Thanks for coming. But it was more of like, I think an indication, should have been admission. Is that an admission that you didn't put enough talent around Cam last year, right? Because he didn't. And I don't know if he ever would admit it, but of course he would have given you another non-answer like he just did.
The other thing I noticed is anytime anybody asked him a quarterback question, he would find some way in the answer to say, we do this with every position. So he does not want to deal with the constant, as we do, the constant attention on when are you going to get a quarterback? Who is that quarterback going to be? It's just like any other position to him. That's how he's looking at it, and that's how he's trying to present it, I think. That's the narrative he wants out there.
Yeah, nobody asked him about Brady.
Nobody.
We had our hand raised and we were ready to but they didn't take any questions. I didn't hear any.
Next question would be from Tyler.
Yeah, Tyler. Tyler didn't get his question in there.
How did they ask him about that?
How impressed was you with that?
I'm just saying, you haven't talked to him in so long.
I know. It was all draft stuff, though.
How did you not just say, like, you know, what was the emotion? What were you feeling watching Brady win another Super Bowl? Like, no, you don't want to piss him off too soon. I guess.
Yeah, well, in the beginning, Lou, Stacey James comes out and he just reaffirms, you know, that, hey, listen, we're talking draft here. You're not going backwards. So it was like, all right, listen.
We don't go backwards unless we
no funny business. No funny business.
For 350 yards last week. Or you don't go backwards unless you got to tell me how successful you've been for the last 20 years. And we won't go backwards to try to tell us that you sold out and that's why you're in the spot. We won't go backwards. Yeah. We're just moving forwards. That's what we do.
All right, I want to play one more when we get back from the break that Tommy Curran asked to him. And we'll also get to Mel Kiper, who suddenly, you should be pleased, Lou. He is apparently predicting exactly what you would like to happen in this draft. And we'll throw a little Celtics in there coming up as well because it's the Celtics and the Lakers. Or at least they're going to be wearing Laker uniforms tonight. Most of the regular Lakers won't be playing. This hour of OMF brought to you by East Coast Metal Roofing.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Follow the show on Twitter at OMF on WEEI.
I don't want to be inside your mind with your kinky fantasies. Like, I know it involves like a ham sandwich or something like that.
What is wrong with that?
Now back to OMF.
Tom Curran, followed by Phil Perry.
Hey, Bill. I had a question relative to where you're positioned this year at 15.
and you haven't been that high since 08. When you're selecting a player there, do the off-field makeups and the way he'll fit into your locker room also incorporate themselves into the decision? For instance, if there are what people would say character concerns or maturity concerns, do you look at that player and say he has to be the total package there? And how hard is it, Bill, secondarily, how hard is it to make that evaluation when you're not spending as much time with these guys? And is there a kind of a scale? We don't want him there, but he's good enough to take in round two with those questions. Sorry to go on, but trying to hammer it all in.
Tell me, Karen, with the three-parter right there.
Wow.
Yeah.
You want to have your hand up once? You want to ask one question? So does, get them all in?
Does Bill actually answer the question? Let's listen.
Ultimately, I mean, it doesn't really matter what round you take the player in. Once he walks in the door, you know, he's the New England Patriot player, and he puts on the uniform and goes out there and competes. It doesn't matter if he's in the second round or the fifth round. That doesn't matter once he's on your team. So whatever his positives and negatives are, whatever he brings to the table, whatever weaknesses you think he might have, or all the other things you brought up, whatever those are or aren't, they're the same no matter, you know, where that individual player gets selected. You know, ultimately, you want to try to maximize the value of your picks, but the player is the player. So whatever his strengths and weaknesses are, that's what they are. And it's important with every pick. It doesn't matter, you know, what number it is or what round it is. The level of talent of the player certainly changes as you go through the rounds in the draft. But I'd say from a process standpoint, it's pretty much the same.
Doesn't matter what round you take him in.
Doesn't
matter.
Once he walks
in the door, all the same.
Yeah, I mean, see, here, okay. There's always some truth to it. Sure, you know, like, yeah, once you get drafted, you're treated just like any other person. You're not going to – if you're a first-round pick, doesn't mean you get to go to the front of the line or sit in the front seat or sit in first class on a plane, or, like, you don't get hazed a little bit. But the expectations are, you know, a lot higher if you're a first pick, and you know they want you to start. You need to contribute.
So if he drafts a quarterback in this first round, and you know, one scenario, and the other scenario he doesn't, and he drafts one in the sixth round, those quarterbacks come into camp with the same, I don't know, thought process and
no, I just said know, no. As far as your
expectations and
let me ask you this. Okay, so if you draft a quarterback. Say fourth round, okay. I mean, a Dak Prescott type. The guy walks into the building. He was overlooked for whatever reason. Sure enough, you get him in the building, and you liked him, but you're like, holy crap, he's 10 times better than I thought, and he's so much better than the guy that we originally thought was going to start for you. So, yeah. I mean, you automatically, and I would say same thing with the first round pick. You bring a guy in, you go, okay, this guy should start right away. You get him in, and he's stupid. He doesn't know where to line up. I mean, I'm not kidding. Like, I mean, that's the harsh way of saying it, but the reality is he has no clue what he's doing, and he's more of a detriment to us than he is an asset. So we're going to have to wait. And if we do want to play him, we got to give him dummy-proof plays. This is what N'Keal Harry was getting his first 2 years, plays where he couldn't screw up. So – I think Bill's been coaching so long that he knows, like, and I believe him on this, like, not to kind of back himself into a corner with, because everything's not black and white. There's just,
that's
it's all gray.
Observation, Christian.
I know, because we think the same, Bill. Bill, we're the same person.
Same person. Sound the same.
Great minds think alike.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, I think other teams look. So teams that I think look at their, like, so Seattle with Russell Wilson, he ends up starting. Dak Prescott, he ends up starting. Do you think that, I think Cincinnati probably assumed, no matter what, that Joe Burrow was going to start. Justin Herbert, you're going to sit behind Tyrod Taylor until we puncture his lung and almost kill him.
And I get it because we've seen it before, right? You could draft, and I don't even know if it was the same year, you could draft a guy like Juwan Williams, and next thing you know, Jonathan Jones is playing, right?
Yeah. Sure.
Like a free agent. So I get that. You could draft a linebacker in a second, one in the fifth, and the guy in the fifth figures it out. Once they're in the room, they're on the same playing field. I just think quarterbacks are different. Like, quarterbacks are different. And it's such an important position that, and I don't know what Curran was talking about, if he drafted one in the first round, the third round,
he was trying to get a
round.
Quarterback. That's what he was trying to do.
Curran was talking quarterback.
And Bill doesn't want to talk quarterback. I mean, Bill, what he's doing is purposely keeping everybody away from the quarterback questions. So once you bring up the quarterback questions, he addresses it as a player, no matter what position they're playing.
Yeah.
Then he gives you that answer. He does not want to deal with this quarterback question. So talking about the quarterback, Lou, you must have been excited when our guy Mel Kiper talked about Justin Fields falling to a place where New England could move up and get him. Listen.
Why do you see Bill Belichick moving up here to take Fields?
I think the pressure to get that quarterback, Greeny, when you're in a division with Josh Allen and Tua and Zach Wilson, that you have to go get somebody like Justin Fields, who I think is the second best quarterback in this draft. Some agree, some strongly disagree. Some think he's the fifth, sixth best quarterback in this draft, if you can believe that. But I think when you look at the mixed opinion, could allow him to slide down. When we know the top three are locked in, then it becomes Trey Lance or Justin Fields for the fourth spot. If it is, in fact, Trey Lance, and that's kind of consensus I heard when I made the calls over the weekend, Greeny, then Justin Fields is available. Now, does Denver, what happens with the Washington football team, what happens with Chicago, there are other teams that could make that move. But I think New England, to me, is front and center. Whether they want to stay at 15, they could, but then who's going to be their quarterback? You know, down the road, think about next year's quarterback. So you're going to have the number one pick in 2023 to get the guy? Maybe not. Probably not. So I think when you look at New England, if Justin Fields does slide, the opportunity then presents itself for teams like New England, Greeny, to move up and get him.
He's right, except he's influenced by his own evaluation of the quarterbacks. He has Fields as his number two quarterback. So, it based on what Bill Belichick was even talking about today, if a guy that they project is sixth or seventh and they drop down to 15, then they, you know, that's a guy that presents great value for them. The problem is, does Bill Belichick have Fields as the sixth, seventh, eighth, or ninth guy on his board? Mel Kiper has got Fields as his second quarterback. That's what he would do if he were drafting at 15.
But it's less about where does he have him ranked. Like, Lombardi basically gave us the answers to the test when he talked about the grading scale, the number that you put on it. Okay, if 69 means you're a first-round pick, you're going to make plays, you're going to always win, you're going to, you know, like, you're a stud. Like, you're an all-pro type of guy. Like, you're a starter as soon as you walk in the door. Okay, we're doing everything we can to come get you. Now, if you aren't and we're at 15, then we don't bother. Because what Lombardi told me is that we're not a need-based draft team.
Correct.
Okay, we need a quarterback. Well, we don't really the guys that are left aren't really, we don't have them ranked very high. But we need a quarterback. Well, we don't want to waste the pick because he's not very good. We're going to look like idiots because he's not going to pan out. But we need a quarterback. They don't do that.
No.
So I don't think, like, hey, if he's the third best, he's the sixth best. They're just not going to take him.
No, and I don't want them to take a quarterback if that's how they feel about him. Like, I don't. Like, I don't want them to sit there and say, you know, here we are at 15, Trey Lance is still there, but we don't really like him, but let's take him because, you know, Lou wants us to. Like, I don't want them to do that. Like, but Mel Kiper was saying, we always talk about before, that fifth quarterback is maybe the one to grab. But we don't know where he is on their board. Like, Mel Kiper, the fifth quarterback taken might be Justin Fields. Mel Kiper's got him as the number two quarterback. Maybe Bill does as well. But I do like that last part. When he just says, like, you know, what's the future hold? You know, and this is the whole bridge to nowhere. I don't expect them to be picking 15 again for a long time. I think their roster's better this year. I could see them in that early mid-20s, somewhere around there. It's going to be harder to even get your guy, you know, next year. So you just, what do? Do you just keep taking shots on guys in the second, third, fourth round? Because, you know, as much as this gamble is taking a guy in the first round, of course, it's more risk because you give up that first round pick. There's even less guys after the first round that are worth anything. I mean, there's a couple of guys here and there, not as many as there are in the first. So the gamble's even higher after the first round. They actually hit on a guy.
Yeah, I'm more convinced than ever that they're not going to do this with a quarterback because it would be the fifth or sixth guy overall on their list.
Might not be on their board, though.
And when you hear him talk, it's more likely that if one of the cornerbacks, even though people are sitting there going, oh, they're fine at cornerback, but if Patrick Surtain, that is expected to be in the top 10, or the other kid from South Carolina, the J.C. Horn, if they end up dropping and Bill's got them up on their board and they have high grades, I wouldn't be surprised at all one of them to be the Patriots pick at number 15. And he just said it today. I wouldn't be surprised if the guy he wants is still there at 15, and he's looking at the other teams and saying, we can get away with five more picks and drop down to 20 and add another pick.
Yeah.
Because he's going to do something like that. That's what I'm convinced he's going to do. Whatever guy is dropped down to 15 that he had high up on his board, He's gonna jump at that guy.
So even if you want to, so I think of like Arizona. They drafted Josh Rosen because they needed a quarterback, and he was the next one available. They regretted it. They didn't. They regretted it so badly that they took another quarterback when they had a better opportunity, a higher pick, and there was somebody obviously better available to them.
Well, they messed it up, right? I mean, they passed on Josh Allen. They passed on Lamar Jackson. They screwed it up. You know, you can look at it 2 years later. I get it, but. You know, they messed that thing up. There was two guys there that were better than the guy that they picked, and they went after him. So they thought they were getting the third best quarterback in the draft, and they actually got the – I don't even know if he was the fifth. I think there's probably guys taken late in the draft that are better than that guy. He's trash. But they passed on Allen. They passed on Lamar. They could have
well,
one
yeah,
of those
guys. And I'm not surprised by them passing on Josh Allen. There was a lot of people that passed on Josh Allen, and he looks like he's a good one. And Lamar was kind of just – you know, an interesting just oddity based on what he was capable of doing. And there was more signs of him not panning out based on Robert Griffin III's of the world that he just wouldn't last. So, but do you think that based on what Bill did in the offseason, do you think that was him acting out of character, changing his philosophy, or like they were saying, take advantage of the situation?
No, I think he had a lot of money. And I think if you look in the past,
he wasn't forcing the issue, I guess, is my point.
No, he said it today. He said there are years that, you know, we haven't spent any cash because we didn't have it, and other years that we do spend a lot of cash. And I think that evens out in the long run. This was a year where it was the perfect scenario, perfect storm, if you want. They could go out and get these players, and, oh, yeah, they had all of this money, and a lot of teams didn't. So they didn't have the competition. That's all I think it was. We'll get into a lot more of that tomorrow. We're going to do more draft coverage tomorrow, and we'll get into more of this Trevor Lawrence stuff. If any one of these other picks had done an interview and said some of the things that Trevor Lawrence had said, I wonder if it would hurt their chances in the draft. Probably won't hurt his. Who's most responsible for this surge by the Boston Celtics? Could it be Perk? We'll get to it coming up next.
Time now for Last Call.
See you later.
I'm done.
And it's been a blast.
I think the show has been a lot of fun.
I mean, I'm letting you go.
No, I'll let it go.
I'm letting you go. Good.
Last Call.
You know, it's really about the end of it.
Our very, very best. You know, we've saved for last.
Thanks for the ride, everybody. I'll see you around the block.
Bye-bye.
Now, it's Last Call on Ordway, Merlone, and Fourier.
Last Call brought to you by Cars for Kids, the easy way to donate your car. Donate today. Your car can be picked up tomorrow. Go to carsforkids.com or 1-877-CARS-FOR-KIDS. When they tell us we can have an 8-minute segment, we don't call that Last Call when we only had about 12 minutes for the entire week. Are you kidding me? So it's the Celtics and the Lakers tonight. You excited, big fella? Your Lakers in action tonight.
Should I be?
No.
I've heard that this is not the rivalry of old, and no one should get excited about it. No, yeah. It's always a big deal when the Lakers and the Celtics are playing. Is it a big deal? Don't you guys still get excited when the Yankees and the Red Sox play? I mean, there's certain games, I don't know.
I do, but does it matter if LeBron and Anthony Davis are out, correct?
Correct.
That's a good thing.
So is this really Celtics playing the good team, the Lakers? No, this is... They absolutely should win.
It gives you a better chance of winning.
So it's not an honest to God true competitive contest. No. But if you're the Celtics, don't you want to add another one to the victory lane? I mean, let's go. What are we doing? I mean, if you're the Lakers, you kind of you sit there and you make excuses because you didn't have all your players. But nobody cares about that.
Right, so they're playing great. They've had a great week. They've been great out on the road. Jason Tatum with 53 against the Timberwolves, 32 against Portland, including a big dagger at the end. So there's no question that the difference of this run has been nobody other than Jason Tatum. I mean, everybody else is kind of playing their normal game. Smart was good the other night. Brown was okay two nights ago. But really, this is Jason Tatum.
My sub has bacon.
So are we to believe that Perk calling him out, and we found out from Perk that he had a phone conversation as well with Tatum, are we to believe that that is what caused this surge by Jason Tatum? Woke him up?
If we want to give Perk all the credit for this, then Brad Stevens should just resign. Like, seriously, Jason Tatum is going to play one way all year long, and it's a tweet from Kendrick Perkins and a phone call from Kendrick Perkins that turns his season around and starts playing, you know, the way he's playing lately, getting to the free throw line, you know, scoring the way he's scoring, being efficient the way he's, because of Kendrick Perkins. Like, Brad Stevens, the coach, can't get Jason Tatum to play this way. It took a tweet from Kendrick Perkins.
Well, did you hear what Brad Stevens said? It's really just the timing. If you remember, this is about the time last year when he ramped up his game. He does this every year.
Well, how about the last week, whatever it was, earlier in the week, the conversation that came out that, you know, maybe Jaylen Brown. Maybe it was Jaylen Brown's one-on-one conversation with Jason Tatum, talking about the two of them and what they need to do. Maybe it was Jaylen Brown, a guy actually on their team and not just, you know, Kendrick Perkins. I don't know. The problem is like, again, it's just... I think it's a bad look. If you want to give all the credit to Tatum, that's fine. But I think it's a bad look to Brad Stevens.
I give it to Perk, yeah.
Well, I mean, but who's are we just going to attribute Jason Tatum's, you know, uptick in competitive play to Perkins? I mean, it's
it
not
all
like
happens
like
everybody
else. Barkley. That's luck. That's luck. I don't think he sat there and said, wow, Perk is calling me out. It's just not Perk's a yo-yo. He calls you out. He gives you a medal. He calls you out. He gives you a medal. I'm like, give me a break. Make up your mind.
Up the timing of when he tweeted, when he talked about it on the air.
Well, the fact that they talked.
Tatum's a different player, guys.
It's my turn.
The fact that they talked is kind of like, I just, when players start, I guess, maybe it's because he was a Celtic and there's a different relationship there. Like, when players start reaching out to the former players who are on TV or on radio that are critical of them, that to me is a weird kind of relationship. Like, I don't think I'd ever want to talk to him. I know it's Tatum. What would Tatum? So what does Tatum need to reaffirm by talking to Perkins? Like, you don't hate me. You just don't like the way I'm playing right now. But we're still friends. Call him. I mean, like, I don't. I just,
yeah,
it's just
them
odd
up for
to
advice.
Me.
Hey, I saw your tweet. Maybe you could help me out.
Yeah,
what
tell
you
me
seeing?
What I should do.
How can I be better? No, I was like, what
my
are you
body
talking
language
about?
Is so bad. What should I do? Should I lift my head up more? Put my chin up? What should I do?
I mean, our games are so similar, Kendrick. I feel like I can really come to you with some advice
exactly
on how I should get my shot.
It's so random.
Come on, you got to work on that post up. Come on.
I mean,
Jason.
Honestly, who knows really what happened? He might have bitch slapped Kendrick Perkins on the phone the whole time.
Exactly.
He might have his ass.
He might have.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
keep my name out your mouth.
Yeah.
Right. Watch your tongue.
Yeah, he's an element.
But I will say this. It to me, it's a positive thing in that if Tatum was kind of hearing all of this negativity, and a lot of it was justified in the way he was playing, and he reacted this way and said, F you, I'll show you how good a player, I'll show you what I can do, then I think this is a positive thing.
Well, he's been playing good. They've been playing better defense. They've been hitting clutch shots. Everything
he
wanted them to do. I know Tatum is getting a lot of credit. Let's not act like he doesn't. But it's more than that. And I would say taking the ball out of Marcus Smart's hand when it matters most. Like, look at the numbers when it comes to, you know, clutch time. We're talking inside 5 minutes, inside 3 minutes, limited amount of possessions, have to make a shot. They're doing that also. And yes, he is part of that. But ultimately, like, that was some of the biggest issues that they've had. So I don't know if it
see,
answers
to me,
all
I,
their problems,
yeah,
but it's definitely a nice start.
Now, to me, I'm seeing most of these guys are kind of playing their similar game, and Jason Tatum has just taken it to a different level. He has taken it to where he literally is taking over certain games. I don't think he was doing that before. And you're probably right, Christian. He's making people around him better, but it's because of what...
Well, that's what you keep saying. That's what
it's because
keep
of what
asking
he's doing.
For.
Yeah. Can he continue to do this, though, over the long term? I just think it's hilarious that Kendrick Perkins calls him out, and right after that, Jason Tatum is responding. I don't know how you look at that. Lou's right that if that's the case, then you have to look at the coach and say, what's
where
going on
been
here? Why couldn't you motivate?
You couldn't get to the player?
Yeah.
Took a tweet and a call from Kendrick Perkins?
All right, so it's the not Celtics and the Lakers tonight. We'll talk a lot about it tomorrow. Is Mutt around? Hi, Mutt.
No, you want to hang on and listen to both. I see Brian Barrett in the studio, and I see Nick Fitzy Stevens also in the studio.
Good.
Wow.
Let's get some time off. That's good.
Psyched about the Red Sox. I'm sure they'll be doing some Bruins, some Celtics, some Bill Belichick, all that good stuff. Don't go nowhere.
So tomorrow, we've got Matt Miller from the Bleacher Report, one of those draft guys he's been on all week. The OMF ups that Ryan puts together will feature Joe, Will, and Lou.
Yeah.
from filling in for our shift all week.
So come on, you know be better than the challenge me.
We'll
you
enjoy that.
The OMF ups during this broadcast. That was perfect.
Well, we'll see
days.
Tomorrow. We'll see tomorrow what Ryan comes up with. Complete hours tomorrow, fellas. Get your rest. You got to put in a full shift tomorrow. We'll do it at 2 tomorrow afternoon. Have a great night. Stay safe out there. Is it time to walk away? I done.
This is WEEI.